Is your God able? Is he able to provide what you need? Some of our greatest needs are assurance, hope, contentment, peace of mind, belief in the promises that there is something greater in the future. Is your God able to provide those needs? The answer to that may depend on whether you spell that word God with a capital G or a little g, and whether or not it is a singular word or a plural word. We live at a time today when many people are frustrated. I'm convinced that a lot of that frustration comes about because of an attempt to serve gods instead of the God. We have seen those who want to serve the God of science and wisdom. We have come up with the atomic bomb, hydrogen bomb, many other things where we hardly know where to take hold and when to let go. And we find ourselves frustrated. We have those who go after the God of pleasure. And in a setting of seeking such a God, the framework of the family has been affected. And we have come up with AIDS and other related matters, and we find frustrations. There are those who follow after the God of money. And perhaps out of that, more than anything else, has come a feeling of anxiety on the part of so many people today. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, that we can look and see that these gods are not able. But we turn to the God of heaven and we find someone who is able. I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that he is able. He is able to deliver thee. Have been the words in some of our last few songs. It seems to me that one of the things that Joshua wanted to do with the children of Israel, as read there from Joshua 24, was to draw a contrast between the gods and the God. As they were preparing to go into the land of Canaan and occupy it and live there, Joshua told them that they needed to make a choice. He indicated to them that they had the ability to make that choice. And he said, you can talk about the gods that were back in Egypt from whence we came, and if you want to, you can continue to serve them. Or you can look at all the gods that are in the land where we're going to be dwelling, the land that we're taking, and if you want to, you can serve them. As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. The children of Israel answered him in the affirmative as far as that kind of service was concerned and said, let's serve God instead of the gods. And yet it only takes a reading of the history of the children of Israel that followed, especially in the book of Judges. Notice that they went after the gods of that country and the gods of the world, and many times allowed themselves to turn their backs upon the God of heaven, to the extent that their history became almost a circle, a cycle of their turning after gods and then God raising up someone to lead them back to him. There was that contrast between the gods and the God. I believe that Elijah was, in a sense, also presenting that contrast in 1 Kings 18. He appealed to the people to make the right kind of choice. He said, don't halt between two opinions. You need to make a choice. And then he drew a contrast between the gods of Baal and the God of heaven. To the 450 prophets of Baal, he issued a challenge and said, you take an animal and put on the altar, and you call for your god or your gods to come down and consume that animal. And then he said, I'll put one on an altar, and I'll ask the God of heaven to come down and consume it. You remember the story of the prophets of Baal building the altar, putting the animal on, calling to their gods, even cutting themselves, attacking their own bodies in the name of trying to get their gods to come down. Nothing happened. Elijah sort of made fun of them and said, well, maybe your God's asleep, or maybe he's gone visiting. And then he took an animal and placed on the altar and asked for 12 barrels of water, 4 barrels three different times, to be poured on the altar, to where the trench around it was filled with water. And he called on the God of heaven, the God who was able. Their gods were not able. Elijah's God was able to come down and to literally lick up the water that was in the trench as the animal was consumed by the fire that came. I think Paul was drawing that contrast in Acts 17 when at Mars Hill, he looked at all of those different statues that they had and the different gods that they were worshiping, and then immediately pointed out that the unknown God, the one that they called the unknown God, is the God that he wanted to talk about. And he said, it's in this God that we live and move and have our being. He could have said to those folks, your gods don't move, they don't live. But the God that I'm telling you about is not one that's made with gold and silver and wood and stone and things of that nature, but is a God who is able to take care of our needs. Is your God able? If you are serving the God of wisdom and science, he may not be able to provide all the needs that you have. In Daniel, the first chapter, as Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego were being taken into captivity to serve, here's what's said about the type young men that were wanted. The king wanted those who were without blemish and well-favored and skillful in wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science. He didn't emphasize the God of heaven, as Daniel later did. The God of heaven would prove in this very book, the story of that book, to be able to bring Daniel back from the lion's den and to protect Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. But that wasn't the God that the king was interested in. He was interested in serving the one who emphasized wisdom and knowledge and science. True science doesn't contradict the truth of the Bible. Truth doesn't contradict truth. But it is estimated by some that as many as 97% of the theories that are promoted in the scientific area are never proven to be true. Out of that setting has come the theory of evolution, to the point that it is almost impossible to turn on a nature-type program on television without seeing the God of evolution presented instead of the God of creation. And our own schools are affected as decisions have to be made. And out of this, we have seen so many things happen that have been bad for people. Many good things have come out of true science, but many bad things have come out of science falsely so called. 1 Timothy 6, verse 20. Paul gives a rather lengthy discussion in the first chapter of 1 Corinthians about the Jews and Greeks who wanted signs and wisdom. And then he contrasts God's wisdom and even calls it foolishness in the eyes of men and says that God did not choose the wise of this world for the answers, to our needs. But he chose the foolishness of preaching, which would present God's wisdom and God's ability to take care of our needs. Although we are thankful for the good things that have come out of technology and other learnings of men, those who would serve the God in this sense and who think that they can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps without the God of heaven are no doubt going to come to a type of frustration. I stepped into a bookstore on Friday at a shopping center up in Kentucky. And just about the time I stepped in, I was facing a section that had at the top of the top shelf New Age. There were several shelves of books, I would suppose at least 50, maybe more. And I just let my eyes wander across those shelves and down to the floor, and I was amazed at the number of books that had the word self in the title. And I stood there and thought for just a moment how so many people are trying to find the answer in self. And one of the extremes of this was seen in the mass suicide that took place just recently, where the idea seemed to be that somehow or other we can go from one level to another and to another level. Or maybe there can be reincarnation and we develop within ourselves the power that is needed to take care of things. No wonder we have a frustrated people. Because the God of wisdom cannot provide the things that are needed unless that wisdom is connected to the God of heaven. There are so many people today who are looking for answers by turning to the God of pleasure. You don't have to listen long. If you listen to the television, the radio, read the newspapers, to see the emphasis that is placed upon doing your own thing, doing what you want to do, what makes you feel good. And we have come to where it seems that there is a general attitude, at least among many people, that as long as consenting adults are involved, and some of them wouldn't stop there, that it's all right for you just to seek your pleasure and do whatever you want to. I saw this week also the results of surveys that have been taken of teenagers at different years for the last few years, and those who admit that they are involved in sexual activities that God reserved for the husband-wife relationship. And out of this, we are seeing a breakdown in the family to the extent that even our politicians are becoming concerned. And we have an epidemic. And I don't think I'm stretching it to call it that. An epidemic of AIDS and other related diseases. Another sexually transmitted disease was mentioned on a program just in the last few days and how it is spreading throughout the younger generation. I heard another program that was talking about the problem of AIDS, particularly in our prisons. And you would guess how they're suggesting solve it. Same way that's suggested on the outside. Not a secession, but an attempt of protection. And we have served the God of pleasure and have looked for what we want, what's in it for me, even to the extent that I believe it's affecting our worship. To where we're thinking about what we want, what gives me pleasure, what do I want? The God of pleasure doesn't have the answer. The God of pleasure isn't able. The God of money And if you and I haven't gotten in on these others, perhaps we'll all get in to some extent on this, because it's not just the millionaire that has the problem with the God of money. I think we tend to believe that that 1 Timothy 6:10 that talks about the love of money being the root of all evil is talking about those who are filthy rich, as we sometimes say, but not necessarily so. Look at the people who are so tied to earthly possessions. Maybe not many earthly possessions, but earthly possessions to where that's what they think about. Are my properties safe? Is the stock market about to crash? And anxiety comes out of this. I really believe that the serving of the God of money is bringing about more cheating, more lying, more dishonesty, more running over people than we have ever seen in our society. We want to get ahead. We're serving the God of getting ahead, the God of money. Money is not evil. Money can be a servant. Pleasure can be a servant. Science can be a servant. All of these can become a servant to us as we serve the God. But when we let these things become our gods, are we going to find the answers? The God of wisdom has given us the atomic bomb. The God of pleasure has given us uncontrollable diseases. The God of money has given us anxiety to where sometimes the problems seem insurmountable. Where's the answer? Just listen to two or three passages of Scripture, and I believe the Bible itself points out to us where the real answer is. Most of us are familiar with Acts chapter 20, where Paul met with the elders of Ephesus and talked to them about feeding the church, which God had purchased with his own blood, and identified some of the problems. But we may quit reading before we get down to verse 32. And now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to do what? To build you up. Give you an inheritance among all them which are sanctified. God of pleasure can't do that. God of money can't do that. But the God of heaven, he says, can build you up and give you an inheritance. In 2 Corinthians, the 9th chapter and verse 8, and God is able to make all grace abound toward you, listen, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things. I'm not for sure that I've arrived at really believing that. And I'm not bragging when I make that statement. But he says that God is able to make grace abound toward you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. He'll give us everything we need and every opportunity we need to serve. The gods can't do that. But the God can. In 2 Timothy, the 1st chapter, as Paul was writing to his young son as he looked at him in the faith, verse 12, for the which cause I also suffer these things. Nevertheless, I'm not ashamed. For I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. Now, all these promises that are made by the God won't go to that day. I mean, by the gods won't go to that day. But the promises that are made by the God of heaven will go to the day of judgment. He says, I'm persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto that day. Our God is able to deliver thee. It is said of Abraham, relative to his faith in the great faith chapter of Hebrews 11, that when he took Isaac to offer him at Mount Moriah, that he believed God was able to bring him back from the dead if God required him to kill him. He believed that his God was able to bring that son back from the dead. Our God is able. You serve the God of science, the God of pleasure, the God of money, I'll guarantee you, you'll have a life of frustration. But if we will serve the God of heaven, he guarantees that we can have assurance, hope, peace of mind, the promise of heaven, and everything that we need in this life. All sufficiency here. Is your God able? What God are you serving? The God of heaven wants us to be his children. He wants us to place our faith in him and let that faith lead us to be penitent, to be baptized for the remission of sins. And then he wants to lead us to live for him, where we do not bow down to the gods of this world, but bow down to serve the God of heaven, knowing that he is able to give us an abundant life here, an eternal life yonder. He is able to deliver thee. And it is to that God who is able that we ask you to submit in obedience as together we stand and sing.
What a glory he sheds on our way. While we do his good will, he abides with us still. And with all who will trust and obey, trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. But we never can prove the delights of his love until all on the altar we lay. For the favor he shows and the joy he bestows are for those who will trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Then in fellowship sweet we will sit at his feet, or we'll walk by his side in the way. What he says we will do, where he says